Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So this would be The Media Project, and we have an opportunity here to give you a half hour of commentary analysis and, if we're lucky, a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week. Dr. Alan Shartok is here.
Hello, hello.
The CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette.
Nice to be back.
It's wonderful to see you all the way from Schenectady to lovely downtown Albany. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in from the Burbs. Happy to be here. So here we are.
So we are, whether we like it or not, we're here.
We have a piece of mail from a listener. Sorry, Judy and I get kind of caught up with that kind of thing. Whatever these people
are.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Must have been something that was on the program last week when I was missing regarding the question about reporting and re-reporting facts about Spitzer or Wiener or Lopez or whomever. What was that? Do you remember what this is about?
Not a clue.
Maybe it's bringing back long-ago things. Sure, go ahead and mention the anomaly which derailed their political career, but you can't stop there because individuals such as Spitzer have outstanding records in public service, and unfortunately, with the limited memory span of a large number of our citizens, that is voters, the previous service records tend to be suppressed by the continuous emphasis on the anomalous behavior, the unfortunate MO of the media, which is driven to maintain and increase its audience.
I think that is an excellent letter, and I happen to agree with it. But I know who's responsible. Both of you are.
I disagree with the letter because we need to be very inclusive about if we're going to report, we got to include all the facts. We don't not report one fact. Those are facts that can't be ignored. It can't be forgotten, can't be buried.
Did you want to have your say before I did mine, Rex?
I just want to say that I think you're to blame, Alan, not just us. You know, I believe you air programs here on this station that also focus on the negative aspects of the careers of these guys, Anthony Wiener and Elliot Spitzer. But most of the focus in the coverage has been on their foibles, mm-hmm. let's say.
Have either of you ever played bridge?
No.
Let me give you a little bridge lesson right now.
Yeah.
There's something in bridge called Trump. Mm. It means that, you know, if you're playing in clubs or something, I don't remember the whole thing.
It doesn't have to do with bad hair.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Very well done, Rexy. And you'd never have be accused of that because your hair is always perfect. No, but Trump means you trump this and you take the trick.
Uh-huh.
And if I give you guys a Rorschach test and I put here two things up, substance, a card says substance, and a card that says sex. Now, as you guys know, as editors, you know, the idea is to interest people and the rest of it. So now we want to see what trumps what. I'm telling you that you put up the word sex in front of you, and both of you people are going to go for it every single time because, you know, the readers are, I hope this is the right word, titillated.
But a newspaper isn't a Rorschach test. It's a newspaper.
What does that mean?
It means that what we do is we provide context. We will include, if the foible is sex, we'll have to include it, but we include everything.
Yeah, I think we've done a good job, actually, of providing some content on what Elliot Spitzer's actual record was and his governor. There are some real holes in it, and we've written stories about his powerful record as attorney general and even those people who are detractors of it. I think we put it in pretty good context, you know? But if you're saying that we're reflecting society's interests, then isn't that an accurate portrayal of what we're supposed to do?
Well, yes. I'm just saying what is as opposed to what is supposed to be. So I think most of the people who listen to this wonderful radio show and many of you tell me all the time that you love the show, is that, you know, your interest is intellectual. You know what ought to be. You know that if I hold up the sex card, that the editors will say, yeah, we'll have some of that. We'll always have some of that because, you know, it interests our people, and because it's too bad. But America is a sexually repressed nation, which fixates on sexuality. And I'm fascinated as I pick up the New York Post every day and the New York Daily News, who are locked in the usual death struggle.
Yeah, they're really repressed.
Well, obviously, they just can't get enough of, you know, putting sexual foibles into their paper, or people who are scantily dressed, or one thing or another. So, I mean, it's almost too obvious to discuss with you, even though your level of denial this morning is extraordinary.
I would point out that none of the news organizations represented here at this table put scantily clad females or males on our pages, or you don't talk about sex.
Well, you're not tabs, of course.
Well,
neither of you are. Your community newspaper is an excellent community
newspaper. But isn't it, both of these guys were rising politicians, Spitzer supposedly on his way to the White House, Weiner on his way to the mayoralty, and they were derailed by various types of sexual escapades. Of course, that's the focus of the coverage. Are they going to be able to come back or not? Because their careers foundered on sex, and so can they rebuild notwithstanding?
Now, I predict that they will be allowed to come back, because remember, what got them into trouble is the newspaper coverage of their foibles, as you put it.
What got them into trouble was their foibles, not the coverage of their foibles.
Well, I would take a little of each. You know, the New York Post and the Daily News know that they can't get enough of it. And all of you, your editorials and everything, have not been kind to either of these people, right? You don't really concentrate on Weiner, but you do concentrate on Spitzer. And I haven't seen anything, with the exception of a recent column I wrote, which has been kinder to Spitzer, because he was a terrific attorney general. He beat the FTC when it came to bringing Wall Street to its knees. He did all of those things. I think that trumps the sexual stuff, which was unfortunate. I mean, it's unfortunate for him. I hate to see the guy go down because of that.
You know, the voters will decide whether that truly trumps it, but I still think you need to bring those old foibles and let the voters at least be aware of it once again.
Is there any way to avoid the lumping together of these guys? New York Magazine's cover last week had a split face, half Spitzer, half Weiner, and it really looked pretty odd. And the difficulty, and of course then you throw in Vito Lopez running for city council.
Lopez,
right. And so it does seem to me that there's a disservice done to the candidates if we lump them together, because they didn't do the same thing, nor are their records similar. I might say, if you look at the substantive record of Elliot Spitzer's service as Attorney General compared to Anthony Weiner's service as a member of the House, there's a big difference in substance there.
Sure, that's true. And you say, as you say, lumping them together. And I don't know if you understand all of history, but there was something called the lumpen proletariat. I thought I'd just mention that.
The lumpen proletariat. Well, there you go. We are all in which place we find ourselves. So anyway, if you want to have an opportunity to influence the conversation, as our friend Jules here, you can write to us media@wamc.org, or send us mail via the U.S. Postal Service. It's still inexpensive. 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, I saw something from the postal workers.
Really?
On the television, there's an ad that says the taxpayers don't support the post office. It's all self-supporting. Is that true?
I don't know.
What was the point of the ad?
Because the postal workers feel that sometimes the wrong political message has gotten out there about how we're all supporting them and their, you know, thing. And I think that the point of the ad was to say we want to set the record straight. And that's something that, you know, sometimes people can do with ads, because they don't get what they consider to be an even break in the newspapers.
Well, we encourage that. In fact, maybe if we were more unfair, we'd be able to sell more advertising as people try to buy their way out of the front page.
Hey,
that's a great idea.
Well, have you ever done that? I mean, has anybody has anybody ever called you up and said, you have undercovered our organization, and have you ever said, well, you know, one of the ways you can compensate for that is buy an ad?
Kind of. Yeah, I mean, basically, I basically said no. If you don't, I mean, what it generally is people saying, you've been unfair to us. And when we think we've been fair, you want to have something that reflects only your point of view, you can buy yourself an ad, you know? I don't think that I've ever actually said to somebody, I'll transfer you to the ad director, but sure. I've been tempted.
I like it. I like this, the whole way this discussion
Hey, there's
going.
A lot of controversy, something we need to talk about. Rolling Stone magazine, as we speak, is not on sale in some places because people are very upset about a cover that shows a photograph of the Boston Marathon bomber, Joachim Czarnecki. And folks are very upset about this, saying that it makes him look like a sweet guy, giving him the notoriety that he craves.
Well, you know, I want to go to Judy because I know she has some thoughts on this. But I have to say that Time magazine put Hitler on the front several times as the man of the year because he was influential and he had done that. I actually have looked at this article, and I can tell you right now, it's pretty damning. It's a very tough article about this guy. And I don't see anything particularly wrong with putting the picture. By the way, it's his own picture. I think he's the one who came up with this picture. On the front of the magazine, and they're standing by it, and I think they should stand by it. Now, they're getting a lot of people saying, I will never buy your magazine again. But we all know what that's about. Judy?
Yeah, you know, he does look a little bit like Jim Morrison in this photo, kind of a soft look to it. And being on the cover of Rolling Stone at some point was a real big deal for rock stars and over time. And I think that's the point people are making, that this does for, at least for my generation, does glamorize it. But the story is a really powerful, well-written, well-researched, hard-hitting story about how he got to where he is. And you've got to have a piece of art on the cover, and this is clearly a compelling piece of art. It's something, the same image we use in our newspaper, but it being on the cover of Rolling Stone does change it a little bit, but I completely support them using it.
Shel Silverstein made a point. He wrote a song once, just saying on the cover
of the Rolling Stone.
And that got them on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Absolutely. You know, it's partly the message of the story, isn't it? That this is an ordinary kid who grew up in the suburbs and went to high school and was in the sports, and that message is conveyed by the cover. The cover actually represents, and so the people, 90% of the people polled by the Today Show, an informal poll, think that the Rolling Stone cover, quote, goes too far, whatever that is. A Facebook page boycotting the cover has tens of thousands of people supporting it.
Yes, and I think they've lost some purveyors of the magazine. I think I heard on WAMC, our station here, that CVS, for example, was not going to sell this particular issue of the magazine. The NPR guy, David Folkenflik, who I don't often agree with or always agree with, is their media guy. And he bent over backwards. I was ashamed of NPR, frankly, to sort of talk about why people were upset and the validity of it. So
you mean you think it was a really fair report? That's my experience with Folkenflik.
Oh, is it?
But I think a lot of people have this idea that Rolling Stone is just a rocker magazine. But I think it can be a serious magazine.
And absolutely.
In this case, it's proven it is.
It's some great journalism.
A couple of lawsuits or threats of lawsuits making the news. One by George Zimmerman's lawyer going to sue NBC as a result of bad editing, supposedly. One by Asiana Airlines saying it's going to sue KTVU-TV following, let's say, bad production. So let's talk first about Zimmerman. Zimmerman's acquitted of the homicide and now is...
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin, yes, thank you. And, of course, is upset because of editing by an NBC producer that removed in a report some months ago some of the context of the tape recording of Zimmerman on the night of the homicide, in which he identified, he was quoted as saying, well, yes, he's black. But it was, of course, in response to a question from the person on the other end of the line, response to a question from the dispatcher who he was talking to, made it sound as though Zimmerman was acting with racist intent. So is there a valid cause, you think, for a lawsuit here in this case?
Well, if there's money out there, there's always somebody who'd like to put their hand into the garbage can and take out some money. On the other hand, this guy is by no means home free. There may be a lawsuit coming at him, a civil suit. And I don't know that this is all not going to get sorted out. We do know that there's a history of people who have been unjustly accused going after, for example, NBC. I think Richard Jewell, wasn't he one of them in the Atlanta bombing cases? And he won. He collected a lot
of money.
Which
I've always thought was unjust, because NBC reported what their law enforcement sources were saying. The Jewell case really revolved around the FBI leaking information that was improper. And I still think that case was a bad judgment.
Well, of course, you're an editor, you're in a newspaper, and of course you would say that.
But in the Zimmerman case, NBC was clearly wrong to edit that, the recording like that, and to broadcast it like that. But whether or not they could be successfully sued for it might be interesting to
see. Didn't they fire the producer?
Yeah,
I think that's correct.
Yeah, it was really intentionally made.
It was bad.
They may have seen this thing coming down the pike, you know, this potential lawsuit. One of the things I've always been impressed by, and sometimes we don't always understand why you're doing it, is the idea that the word alleged occurs a lot when you're reporting on somebody who is in many minds obviously guilty, but you still say alleged. Now, I thought Zimmerman was going to get off from the very beginning. I didn't like it, but I thought he was. So you would have to, if you knew that, or if you had the same sensibilities as I did, because, you know, who's on a jury? At least it would be a hung jury, I thought. Then you'd have to be particularly careful as a journalist, would you?
No, you're always particularly careful when you're dealing with someone accused of a crime. We're really careful.
Tell us about it.
We don't accuse people of crimes. The police accuse people of crimes. The courts accuse people of crimes. And we don't write stories that accuse people of that. We always couch it in those terms.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Let me give you a hypothetical, okay, Judy?
I love hypotheticals.
Okay. You print the story which say, our source, a high-placed policeman, said, he did it. Now, how do you handle that?
No, I don't run that.
You don't run that?
I don't run an unnamed source saying someone did it. No, don't run it.
Rex?
I have to have two sources, both independently know a fact.
Okay,
I don't I'm really careful about unnamed sources.
And she would know who the source is, too.
Yeah.
The source is plural.
Two highly placed sources in the Albany Police Department said, this is the guy, he did it.
Oh, but you mean but they haven't been charged with a crime?
Right.
Well, you know, hypotheticals are difficult because it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What's the phrase you always use?
Well done, Trump.
It depends. No, no, it depends. Anyway, I mean, it really does matter the nuances of things. And so.
Well, but there's a whole bunch of stuff now coming out about the way in which sources are protected. And I'm wondering whether or not, because obviously you may have a higher standard, Judy and Rex, than others do. But in fact, this stuff goes on all the time.
Hey, yes. The bottom line is that cop might have said that, but unless he was actually there, how does he really know that so-and-so killed so-and-so? He doesn't know. He's a cop. He's making a supposition.
But if there's an arrest,
evidence.
You know, if there's an arrest, that means that there's a prima facie case then made anyway, and we report the arrest. You can't fail to report an arrest even if you think that it's an unjust one. Meanwhile, something that it was obviously sloppy journalism was KTVU TV out in the Bay Area, which incorrectly named the pilots on that Asiana flight that crashed.
God. That was some story.
Clearly,
tell us the story.
Well, KTVU has not made clear how they initially received these two names, but they then supposedly went to the National Transportation Safety Board, where they got, yes, that's confirmed.
Could that have happened?
How can that possibly happen? And these names were, you know, fly too low or something like this. They were made up.
So this is okay. Let's
Chinese
just for everybody who's listening who may not know, this is a Korean airliner. Somebody was making fun of the pilot's name, like Fly Too Low, or whatever, as you say, whatever they were. I don't really remember. And they say in their defense that an intern was collecting the information.
No, an intern at the National Transportation Safety Board confirmed it when they called NTSB to say, and that intern, of course, acted outside the scope of the authority, NTSB said, and was fired. But still, KTVU fell for the hoax. Unclear how they first got the names. They haven't said that. One of the things that I thought that you did in broadcasting is you would read aloud your script before you go in the air, in which case if you saw that a name said Fly Too Low as the pilot,
a light would have gone off above someone's head.
You would
this
think.
This is not right.
You would hope. But I would...
Not if they were Ted Baxter.
Well, that may be part of the problem here. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok of WAMC, Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette of Schenectady. I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union, and we are talking to you about the media issues of the week. Here's one that's going on in the world of television. ABC has announced that an actress named Jenny McCarthy is going to become a co-host of The View, that very popular daytime program that was founded by Barbara Walters. And here is what has raised a question about that. Jenny McCarthy is best known as a spokeswoman, a great supporter of the opposition to giving children vaccines. She is one of the people who has said that vaccines are dangerous for kids and so on, and that they lead to autism, which point of view has been widely discredited by scientists. So does this point of view mean that she shouldn't have a position such as this? Any thoughts on that, folks?
Judy?
You know, I never really considered The View a news product, more an entertainment product. I didn't really have a problem with Jenny McCarthy being one of the people who talk about celebrities and et cetera on The View.
Well, let the people decide. You know, if they think that she's unacceptable, they'll turn the television off. If, in fact, you know, it's a point of view, it's a widespread point of view. I hate it, by the way, because I think it leads to the potential for some real harm. A kid doesn't get vaccinated, comes into class, does something else that we can spread these things, you know, things like whooping cough. We don't have much whooping cough anymore. And that's because of these vaccinations. And then they say things that are wrong about the vaccines. But if people don't like it, they won't like it.
But now, what about the coverage of her appointment to this position? Now, here's the question. USA Today covered it by saying that her claims were, quote, controversial, and said that her critics were pro-immunization advocacy groups. Now, the question really is it not just controversial? Shouldn't the question about her appointment be couched in terms that are a bit more direct than that? It's not that her point of view is controversial. Her point of view is
wrong.
Wacko. And shouldn't that be said directly in the coverage of her?
Well, let's just say that Judy is sitting here. It's a radio show, and she's nodding her head vigorously. So, Judy, you obviously have something to say about
this. Sure, her views are wrong, and that needs to be clearly stated. And the other thing we also have to consider is putting her on The View, does that increase her credibility so people will think, oh, well, maybe she does know what she's talking about when she talks about vaccines?
Yeah, that's right. It gives her credibility, so which is a real problem, especially if, you know, because daytime television is frequently, the audience is largely female, and health issues are frequently taken up by women more than men. It's an interesting topic. So she's likely to be talking about health issues on the show.
I get it all the time. People call up and say, we have a conservative commentator here. He only has 4 minutes a week or whatever. His name's Herb London.
It's very
and
big
I get
of
more
you.
Phone calls about this guy than anything else, you know. Say, like, take him off. He's dangerous. Like, why is he dangerous? I say, people will believe him. People may believe him.
But so, that's different. Yeah. He has a point of view, Herb London, versus somebody who is actually flying in the face of science, you know.
Oh, well, you know, I want to point out Mr. Columbus. Remember? He said the world was round.
Yeah.
And the prevailing scientific theory at the time was that the world was flat. And when you reached the end, you went off. The end of the world.
Yeah, well, you carry on that argument a little bit further, and you're going to be part of the deniers of global warming, you know.
Not me.
Well, but that's basically the point of view you're espousing, is that we
no,
have
I'm
to
not.
Give
No, I'm
credit.
Saying, though, that sometimes science turns out to be wrong. Uh-huh. What you call a science turns out to be wrong.
So are you saying that maybe Jenny McCarthy's right?
No.
Oh, all right.
No,
just
I think Jenny McCarthy,
clear.
And as I've already pointed out, so you guys always take the dirty low road with me when you can, but I've already pointed out, I think it's very dangerous. But I'm also taking the
another
devil's,
road.
The devil's advocate.
The devil's road.
We're just happy. Judy and I are happy to give you a chance, Ellen, to expose yourself here. Good heavens. Here we are talking
expose
about sex
myself.
Again.
Expose myself. There you are. Back to sex again.
Isn't that just like the media? All right, folks. You'll have to join us again next week. Judy Patrick, Alan Chartok. I'm Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Killers, plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers, plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk.
She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's Unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.